Hello, my name is Brian Owens. I sculpted the bronze of Frankie Muse Freeman. I assume you know something about her. I'm going to skip that because I want to talk about the design. In the beginning, the client said they wanted me to do two things. One, create a 6-foot likeness, and two, design the means by which her biography is presented and the major donors are recognized. Usually that involves making a base, and usually the client handles that stuff, which makes my life a lot simpler and allows me to concentrate on the sculpting. But I was happy to take it on because there were some things I wanted. Most of all, I wanted to keep the sculpture as low to the ground as possible. Placing sculpture up high on a tall base is something we inherited from the Europeans, and it's usually a bad idea. If the intention is to remind people of their status as colonial subjects, then it works very well, because you don't care that people can't see it properly. But if you want people to see all the work that went into sculpting the face and actually identify with the sculpture, if the underlying message is that the subject of the sculpture is, like us, composed of Eros and of dust, and that it's possible for you and I to also achieve greatness in our own way, then 6 inches off the ground is high enough. I could have made a 6-inch base out of stone and put some plaques on it, but I wanted a base with no seams, where all you see is raised text on a continuous surface. I wanted the base to be a bit of a mystery as to how it was made, as is the case with the sculpture standing on it. So I'm talking about design as if nothing else matters, because sometimes it's useful to think that way. But the world is more complicated than that, right? If the design is a space you can move around in, then it comes with all sorts of built-in limitations. The space is bounded by gravity, the strength of materials, how much money and time you have. And here's my point. You see how the shoes meet the base? Way back when the design was just a sketch, I already knew how to build that part, and I knew that the connection would be strong enough. Form and function are two sides of the same coin. I didn't have to struggle to compose the figure because it is heavily influenced by the photo on the front of her autobiography. The photo shows Frankie Freeman descending the steps of the old courthouse and contains many of the features I wanted in the sculpture itself: professionalism, style, femininity, motion, swagger. Following the photo was an obvious choice, but it was a good choice. The newspaper she's holding is based on the issue of the St. Louis American that ran on December 29th, 1955, after a federal court upheld the landmark case she won a year before. When I first met Freeman, I asked if she would help me invent a better headline because the actual headline wouldn't make sense to the general public. And without hesitation, she said, "Circuit Court declares segregation of public housing illegal." It was more of a command than an answer, and I used it exactly as she said it. The attaché case resembles the type that was popular in the mid-50s. My intention was to have it dangling from her fingertips, but that would have been too vulnerable to vandalism, so we had to shorten the handles and change the design in order to increase strength. The period attire works nicely. In the 1940s, women's clothing was looser and more practical because they were doing many of the jobs previously done by men, men who were away fighting a war. In the 50s, women's clothing got a lot tighter and showed off the figure, and I wanted to capture that to add interest. First time I visited Frankie Freeman, there were a few other people in her flat. Her daughter Shelby was there. Also, there was a woman I did not recognize, but she was a 3-time Emmy Award winner. My mission was to leave the place with enough information to sculpt Freeman's hair. You have to understand exactly what the hair is doing in order to sculpt it. And I don't know jack about women's hair, much less how they wore their hair in the mid-50s. So, the Emmy Award winner and Shelby developed a plan. They would take me to go buy a wig that was close enough, good enough to get me started. Time was of the essence. Therefore, Miss Emmy, who was improperly attired, sat in the back of the car to reduce the risk of being spotted in public. The mission was a success. A few months later, Shelby, who was also an artist, visited my studio in Florida and contributed to the project once again by helping to sculpt the hair, especially where it meets the forehead and on the back of the head. She was into it. I didn't realize how much this meant to her until much later. The most important part of the sculpture is the face. There's a lot to it, but I'll just talk about the smile, which, in the beginning, was quite carefree. The smile of a woman who knows she's being photographed. It evolved over time. Her facial expression changed from obvious joy to cautious optimism. In my imagination, this is the smile Leonard Cohen wore when he wrote that song Hallelujah. Or perhaps the smile of a captain who has won her first battle in a conflict with no end in sight. As a realist, I'm working within a tradition that has rules. I can't just do whatever I want. People have to see Frankie Freeman in the bronze. Certain proportions have to be correct. Some facts have to be observed. Once you get enough of those facts down, you're free again. Free to make her 6 feet tall. Free to imagine how she may have appeared in the August of her life. Free to let her smile be influenced by the words of a song. I've never met the filmmaker Werner Herzog, but he said something I'll never forget. He was talking about documentaries, but it also applies here. He said, "Facts do not necessarily constitute truth. Truth is what illuminates you and transports you." I'm not saying this bronze has that effect on people, but it is something that I aspire to.